All right, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going deep on a Supreme Court case, Sandzinski v. United States, 1937 case. And it's one of those that, gets into the nitty-gritty of just how much power Congress has when it comes to taxes and how that can sometimes kind of sneakily turn into regulation.
Right. It's like,
Nudging
how you're
behavior.
using money.
Yeah, using the power of the purse to kind of shape how things happen
Exactly.
and
Yeah.
what are the boundaries of that power,
Totally. And for this deep dive, we've got, as always, an amazing set of resources. We've got some, internal podcast guidance just to keep us on track. We've got a perplexity analysis, which always helps us kind of go through the legal weeds. We've got a standard case brief just laying out, the basics. And then, most importantly, we have excerpts from Justice Stone's majority opinion, which is really, the meat of the matter. Exactly. Get into, what the court was actually thinking.
And our goal, obviously, is to kind of synthesize all this stuff so that you, our listener, can really understand this this pivotal case. So the heart of Sandzinski, the real question here, is was this $200 annual tax on firearms dealers, was that really about raising money, or was it Congress's way of kind of,
Is it a workaround?
Was it a clever way to regulate gun sales without explicitly saying we're regulating gun sales? And that brings up some really, really big question about, who gets to do what? Congress, the courts,
The balance of power.
the whole thing.
The balance of power. So let's get into it. What was going on that led to this case ending up in the Supreme Court?
All right, so let's break it down. So we've got Max Sandzinski. He's a firearms dealer in Illinois. Back in 1934, Congress passes the National Firearms Act, and part of that act was a $200 a year tax on dealers who sold certain types of firearm.
Okay, got it.
Now, Sandzinski, he doesn't pay this
He
tax.
refused.
He gets convicted. And his argument, it was pretty straightforward. He's like, this isn't about the government making money. This is a punishment. This is to make it so expensive to sell these guns that nobody's going to sell them. Essentially trying to restrict sales by making it just too pricey.
Yeah, make it economically unfeasible.
Exactly. And his point was, Congress, you're overstepping. This is something that states should be handling.
This is getting into their turf. So what did the lower court say about that? Did they agree with him?
Well, they didn't. They actually
They sided with the government.
they upheld his conviction,
Okay.
and that's what, kicked it up to the Supreme Court.
Makes sense.
And this is where we get to that tension you were talking about. Is this a legitimate taxing power? Something that, is right there in the Constitution?
Article one.
Or is Congress being sneaky and using taxes to do regulation, which, raises a whole bunch of other constitutional issues, especially back then in 1937?
Especially back then. Yeah, the relationship between the federal government and the states was even more, fraught than it is now. So the case is before the Supreme Court. What was the big question that they had to answer?
So the big one was this $200 tax on these firearms dealers, was that a valid use of Congress's taxing power under Article 1 of the Constitution? Or was it, as Sandzinski argued, them trying to regulate firearms in a way that they weren't really allowed to?
Because regulating firearms, that's not explicitly given to the federal government in the Constitution.
And this distinction is massive, right?
Okay.
Because it gets into just how much power the feds actually have.
It's the difference between them being able to do something directly and having to find a workaround like this.
And it makes you think about, we have taxes on things like alcohol, tobacco,
Sin taxes.
sin taxes, and those definitely have a regulatory effect,
Of
right?
course, yeah. I mean, they make those things more expensive, and presumably that discourages some people from using them.
So what was it about the firearms tax that made Sandzinski feel like, okay, this is different. This has crossed the line.
Yeah, good question.
And that's where the court's logic comes in, right?
Okay.
So Justice Stone, he writes the majority opinion, and he makes this super important point. He says, every tax has some regulatory effect.
Interesting.
Right? Like, think about it. Anytime the government taxes something, they're making it more expensive. And that's bound to change how people act, right?
Yeah, it changes incentives.
So he even uses the example of cigarette taxes. Obviously, they bring in money, but they probably also lead to fewer people smoking.
Right, they have that side effect.
Yeah, so just because the firearms tax might lead to fewer gun sales, that wasn't enough for the court to say, nope, this is unconstitutional.
Interesting.
And it makes you wonder about other things, right? Like, you know, what if there was a tax on social media algorithms that were designed to spread, you know, harmful content or something?
Yeah, to try to disincentivize that.
Exactly. Based on Sinzinski, if that tax brought in money, the fact that it was trying to regulate might not matter.
Yeah, that's a lot of power for Congress.
It is. It is.
So it sounds like the court was less focused on any potential side effects of the tax and more on what its primary purpose was.
Exactly. The key thing was the tax's main function to make money for the government.
Okay.
And in Sinzinski, the court said, yeah, this $200 tax, it is bringing in revenue.
It's doing what a tax is supposed to do.
Exactly. And that was a big part of their decision.
Yeah. Okay. And there were cases before this where the court had actually struck down taxes, saying they were basically penalties in disguise. Like there's the child labor tax case. What did the court say about that? Like, how was Sinzinski different?
That's a really good point. That's important. So in those other cases, like the child labor tax case, the taxes were seen as punishments, not real taxes,
Okay.
because they were so high, like ridiculously high, that it basically made it impossible to do the thing being taxed.
Yeah.
And they were often attached to super specific rules
Okay.
about, you know, how businesses could run, how old their workers had to be, things like that.
Right. It wasn't just pay this money. It was pay this money and also follow all these other rules.
Right. But the National Firearms Act, at least this part of it didn't have those kinds of detailed rules attached. It was
Yeah.
just a flat fee every year for dealers.
Got it.
And this is where Justice Stone's famous quote comes in.
Oh, right, about Congress's motives.
Yeah, the one everyone always talks about, he says, and I'm quoting here, "Inquiry into the hidden motives of Congress is beyond the competency of courts."
Wow.
Like, think about that for a second. Even if we had proof that some members of Congress only wanted this tax to limit gun sales,
Yeah.
the court basically said, not our problem. We look at the law itself. Does it work like a tax?
Interesting. So even if they could see through it, they weren't going to get into that.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a pretty big restriction on what courts can consider.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So based on all this, based on Sinzinski, what are the big signs that a tax is legitimate, that the Supreme Court would say, yeah, that's okay?
Okay, so from this case, we can kind of pull out three main things. Number one, does the tax actually bring in money?
Okay.
In Sinzinski, the $200 it did.
Right.
Number two, is it structured like a tax, meaning a general fee, not a punishment for specific actions? And this one fit that, right? It was just that flat annual fee. And number three, are there any obviously unconstitutional rules directly tied to the tax in the same law?
Right.
The National Firearms Act, it was mostly about the tax itself and a registration requirement.
Okay.
And the court in this case didn't see that as unconstitutional.
Yeah. So basically, if it looks like a tax and acts like a tax, it's probably a tax.
Right. And you remember how you mentioned sin taxes?
Yeah, like on cigarettes and stuff.
The court specifically said, we don't really care about the motives behind a tax or any side effects it might have.
Right.
And that's why we have things like taxes on vaping or even talks about carbon taxes, right?
Exactly.
These are meant to discourage behavior, but they also raise money for the government. And under Sinzinski, that makes them pretty likely to be upheld.
Yeah, I see that. So it's like Sinzinski set the stage for these kinds of taxes, even if the main goal isn't just to raise revenue.
Yeah. And it makes you think about, you know, even more controversial examples like imagine a federal tax on sugary drinks
Oh.
to try to fight obesity. Under Sinzinski, if that tax brought in revenue,
Yeah.
the fact that it was meant to, you know, discourage people from drinking soda
Right.
might not be enough for a court to strike it down.
That's really interesting.
Right. So does this basically mean Congress can regulate indirectly
Yeah, that's the big question, isn't it?
just by using its power to
Yeah.
tax?
Like, did Sinzinski basically give them a loophole?
That's definitely the tension. And even Justice Stone acknowledged it. He said, and I'm quoting again, a tax is not any less a tax because it has a regulatory effect. So it seems like the court's position is our job isn't to figure out why Congress is taxing something. Our job is to see if it actually works like a tax.
Right, they're not mind readers.
Right, exactly. Does it raise money? Is it structured like a normal tax? Those are the questions they're asking.
Okay, that makes sense. So, big picture, what are the main things our listeners should take away from Sinzinski?
So the direct outcome, the holding of the case, is that $200 tax on gun dealers, it was constitutional.
Okay.
But the bigger takeaway, the more important one, is that courts tend to defer to Congress when it comes to taxes.
They give them a lot of leeway.
Yeah, a lot of leeway. As long as the tax actually generates revenue,
yeah,
courts probably won't overturn it, even if it's pretty obvious that it's also meant to change behavior.
Interesting. So motives don't really matter, just results.
Basically, yeah.
So for our listeners out there, you know, law students, people interested in policy, what should they keep in mind when they're looking at new tax proposals?
Well, thanks to Sunzinski, the big question to ask is, does this tax bring in money for the government?
Mm-hmm.
Because if it does, it's probably going to be considered valid no matter what the real goals behind it might be.
Yeah. It's a good reminder that, you know, Congress has a lot of power when it comes to taxes, and the courts generally aren't going to second guess them too much.
Right. And that's, you know, that's separation of powers in action.
Yeah.
Congress makes the laws, courts interpret them. But in this area, the courts are giving Congress a lot of space.
A lot of deference.
Okay. Exactly. And it also shows the limits of judicial review.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the power of the courts to strike down laws. Sometimes they just have to step back.
Right. They can't intervene on everything.
Exactly.
So Sunzinski is a great example of all of this. You know, it shows how these different parts of the government interact, where the lines are drawn.
Totally. It's a foundational case. It really shows how separation of powers works. And it highlights the limits of judicial review when it comes to Congress's power to tax.
Yeah, and it shows that the court is more concerned with whether something functions as a tax than with why it was created in the first place.
Exactly. So to wrap things up, you know, what we've learned from diving into Sunzinski
mm-hmm.
is that Congress has a lot of flexibility when it comes to taxes. And those taxes, even if they're meant to regulate behavior,
yeah,
they're probably going to be okay as long as they bring in money.
Right. That's the key.
Yeah.
So to sum up, the main takeaway from Sunzinski is that Congress has broad authority when it comes to taxation. And this power can have significant effects on how people behave.
Mm-hmm.
The key factor for the courts is whether a tax actually brings in revenue, not the reasons behind its creation.
And that's a lot to think about, right?
Definitely.
So here's something for you, the listener, to consider as we end this deep dive.
Okay.
Given this pretty broad taxing power that Congress has, what are some areas where we might see taxes being used in new and interesting ways to influence how people behave?
Oh, that's a good one.
Right? Like, think about emerging technologies, changing social norms.
Yeah, like what kind of taxes might we see on things like, I don't know, artificial intelligence, genetic engineering?
Exactly, yeah. And then the debates about those taxes, what are they really trying to do? Especially when we think about the principles laid out in Sunzinski.
Right, exactly. It's like, will those taxes really be about raising revenue? Or will they be about controlling these new technologies, these new social trends?
Right. And it's a fascinating area to think about how these legal ideas we've been discussing might apply to the challenges and the opportunities of the future.
Definitely. It's something to keep an eye on.